What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Damage Report on a Thursday with me, Francesca Fiorentini, in for John Iadarola, who again is out on paternity, doing the damn thing day by day. And so are we here with a massive news day. So I'm really excited that Yasmin Khan of Rebel HQ and the podcast Modern Context is here. Yasmin, what's going on?
A lot's going on, apparently. We're going to talk about all of it.
You know what? Usually there's like something light or like a TikTok trend or like something fun.
None of that.
Now, no. What is fun about today is we are just going to go down the line of Trump stooges and mock them one by one.
Peter Navarro, he's a favorite of mine. I like him. He's
Peter Navarro's great. Just kind of a sleeper. You know what I mean? Kind of like he's there running his mouth. But you're like, you know, what is he really doing today?
But we're gonna find out. Pay attention to him. It's always very entertaining.
Always. Today will be no exception. Obviously, Mitch McConnell, Senate Minority Leader, is visited by another demon. Somehow, we're getting get into Rudy Giuliani's financial troubles. Yes, they deepen. Then, of course, a little bit of what a centrist like Manchin are up to, because it's just not enough to be shadow president. There is a lot more that he wants. There's people he wants to speak for. There are corporations who need a voice. So, before we get into it. You guys know what to do. You like in the stream, you share in the stream, you're letting people know what you get up to every morning or every midday or whenever the hell it is you're watching this. But for now, Yasmin, are you ready? You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do
it. Okay, let's cool. John does that and I just had to do that. So anyway.
He does do that. Thank you, I appreciate it.
And I'm always like, yeah, I'm here. What do you want from me? All right.
We're here.
We are so ready. They're tuck in everybody. Let's start with this.
You said in 2016, you know, lock her up. And then when you became president, you said, we don't do that in America. That's just not the right thing to do. That's what they're doing. Do you regret not locking her up? And if you're president again, will you lock people up?
Will you lock people up? Says Colonel Glenn Beck. Sanders has called and wants his outfit back. My God, he's slowly going to turn into a piece of fried chicken. But so there's Glenn Beck again, still around, asking the former president Donald Trump, you know, just the most leading question, the question we hear out of right wingers all the time, which is, so what are you going to do? Are you going to create a fascist police state? Please say yes. So Trump does have an answer. Let's take a listen.
Well, I'll give you an example. The answer is you have no choice because they're doing it to us. I always had such great respect for the office of the president, the presidency, but the office of the president. And I never hit Biden as hard as I could have. And then I heard he was trying to indict me, and it was him that was doing it. You know, I don't think he's sharp enough to think about much, but he was there, and he was probably the one given the order. But he would, you know, hard to believe that he even thinks about that because he's gone. But then I said, well, they're actually trying to indict me because every one of these indictments is him.
It's all him, sleepy Joe Biden, who's not even there. He's sort of gone. But Yasmin, he's behind everything. And also, you have no choice but to lock up the people who want to lock you up, provided you're not actually locked up. Because then there's a whole, I don't know the order of operations here, but this is all fun and games and it's all funny, I guess. But he is going to be the Republican nominee. And this feels like the kind of behavior that like the United States has like, you know, help topple regimes over, that people topple their own regimes over, which I'm just wondering who's going to coup the United States at this point. But what do you make of this? Is he just saying that he's going to lock people up just to say it? Or do you think he actually is, if reelected, you know, going to pursue all of this?
Going to lock people up. I also think it's funny that that was how Glenn Beck decided to pose the question, because he just said, are you going to lock people up? Not like if you find crimes committed, are you going to do something about it? He said, just lock people up, which is really weird. I also like the hypocrisy, maybe not the hypocrisy, but just how their own Republican narratives tend to like cancel each other out. Like Joe Biden is so sleepy, he doesn't know what's going on, he has dementia, but also he's this mastermind. And it's Joe Biden, specifically him personally, who is going after Trump right now. Yes. So I have no idea what Trump is going to do whenever he gets into office. Right now, we already see the Republicans trying to find crimes where there are none. And they're trying so hard to find crimes. And even with all that effort and time and money that they're spending doing it, they still don't have crimes that they have found. They don't have evidence for things. And I know that this is actually going to come up in some of the stories that we're going to be talking about later in the show. But it's just like, if you really had the evidence, then show it to us. But you don't have it. So they're just going about talking about crimes and saying we have evidence, but they don't. So
yes, the sleepiest crime family in all of the land. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're absolutely right. The lock them him up, which is like, hang on, time out. Are you mad you didn't lock him up? Wasn't it, I'm sorry, reclaiming our time. Wasn't it lock her up? Let's not erase Hillary Clinton here. You can't just graft your old slogan onto Joe Biden, be like, I should have locked him up. Also, you went pretty hard against Joe Biden as the president, trying to like basically undermine your opponent in all kinds of illegal ways. In fact, I'm pretty sure you got impeached for it the first time. Remember that? And then when the shenanigan didn't work, you got impeached again. So bro, you went pretty hard. You tried to strong arm the president of a small country into like, oh, just find me some dirt. And Zelensky's like, oh my God, I'm trying, but I'm pretty sure this is illegal. But that doesn't matter because MAGA chuds are very excited for Donald Trump to come back into office. They're promising all the things that he's kind of promising, I guess. Here's Charlie Kirk with a very long tweet that I think he had to pay for. Trump 2.0, 47 will not be 45. Okay, here's the list. He'll fire the deep state via Schedule F. Thousands of Democrat bureaucrats will get fired day one. Local DC housing market will be impacted. I love that like random tidbit. Like, okay, well, yeah, let's look out for the local DC housing market. Ukraine insanity will be stopped, as in will allow Russia to do whatever they want. Whole agencies will be moved out of the DC swamp. Department of Ed eliminated completely. Border will be restored. Deportation of Biden's millions of illegals will commence. I love the commence is such a, ooh, you're such a little schoolyard boy. It'll commence. Criminal intel agents will be prosecuted. American energy production unleashed. College funding will be revoked for secret AA emissions. I don't know what that is. JFK files released, thank God. Federal DEI positions abolished. Military recruitment will surge and more. Trump 2.0. will be a retribution presidency. I'll be back. Like, can we cue that doom, doom, doom? Fog machine, fire, fire. Honestly, this, as corny as this sounds, Yasmin, Stephen Miller was in the White House. So these kinds of fantasy Nazi nerds, they have tried to come true. And for many people who suffered under the Trump administration, did come true. But should, again, I'm caught between like, these are idiots, and also I'm very terrified, which has kind of been the entire theme of the Trump years in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what the Trump years have been for so many people is just like, just incredulity and just disbelief. And like, how did we get to this point? How did any of this happen? And is it going to get any better? It's really hard to kind of see the end point of all of this, right? Like, how long are we stuck in this weird vortex with time and this weird president and all these people who are scary to a lot of Americans? And you want to laugh at the things that they say, but it's hard to even laugh anymore, because then next thing you know, all these crazy things that they're saying become reality. They actually get into office somehow. People actually vote for them. QAnon used to be something that was hilarious when it first came out. I remember I did like a Instagram story about it, and I was like, this is crazy. And then next thing you know, it's like destroying families across America. And some of these QAnon believers are actually in our government. So
yep.
I don't know what the end goal is here. I don't know what the way out of it is, but I just like, I'm so exhausted. I'm so tired of this whole phase of American history.
Oh my God, amen, amen. And yet we are so far from getting out of it. Here's someone irrelevant who has thoughts on what should happen next. Here's Sarah Palin on what should happen in terms of locking up opponents should Trump get back into office.
Alrighty. Do you have concern for the country as I do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think those who are conducting this travesty and creating this two-tier system of justice. I want to ask them, what the heck? Do you want us to be in civil war? Because that's what's going to happen. We're not going to keep putting up with this. And Eric, I like that you suggested that we need to get angry. We do need to rise up and take our country back.
Yes, take your country back through the doors of the the windows of the Capitol building. That's just an idea. I've never seen it before, but like, what if you like scaled the walls and you pushed over DC police and Capitol police officers and you hit them with American flags? I mean, that'd be crazy. That'd be crazy. No one's actually seen anything like that except for when we totally all saw you basically try to incite civil war against this country. So cool, cool, cool. Still at it. And Yasmin, to your point, still inspiring, you know, far right extremist violence, racist violence, as we just saw a few days ago in Jacksonville, Florida. So I'm not sure when the game on is for the Civil War, but for sure, the people who watch Newsmax, the people who follow Donald Trump, they're not waiting. They are taking matters into their own hands. And by matters, it is trying to murder specifically Black Americans, but immigrants, people of color, women. That is the goal.
Yeah, and what's interesting about a lot of this is, I think I was recently talking about this, the Republicans are accusing the Democrats of fear-mongering all the time. And that clip from Sarah Palin, it's like, I don't even know how you can say something like that seriously without hearing what's coming from your own side or your own party or whatever. I don't know if Sarah Palin is even like an actual player in the Republican Party anymore, if she's just like somebody who goes on these shows and says things like, we need to get angry, we need to like maybe start a civil war, or the civil war is coming. And what's scary about all of this is that the people that she's addressing, the people who watch these shows, are people who live very isolated lives in very isolated, you know, homogeneous communities. So they don't actually know what's going on out in the world, out in cities. They just don't go. They don't know what, they've never met certain people. They've never met people of color. They've never met immigrants, et cetera, et cetera. So they're afraid of all these various groups of people and things that really aren't threatening their livelihoods. But now they're reacting to it as if their entire lives are under threat. And they're just not. Like, it just isn't the case.
Yes. And so let's just check in with those people. Let's check in with the American public, okay? Because Donald Trump says that all of these indictments, four and counting, I'm excited for the reality show. Come on, you've got a future. That all of them are politically motivated, that Biden is controlling the Justice Department 100%, even though Biden is trying to bend over backwards to distance himself from Merrick Garland and the rest. But so what do the American people think? Is it politically motivated or not? Well, interestingly, people say it's not. So this is a new poll put out by, I believe, Politico and Ipsos. It was over 1,000 adults, 18 or older, interviewed online. Justice Department is being fair, according to the majority of respondents. 59% agree the Justice Department is being fair. 23% of Republicans, 89% of Democrats, and 64% of independents, which is pretty huge. And then more interestingly, a lot of these voters want to have this trial done before the election. I mean, which one? We can imagine probably the Jack Smith January 6th indictment. But basically, they're like, we want this to be wrapped so we can make a clear-headed decision. So here's more polling on that. 61% say they want a trial before the general election. 33% of Republicans, surprising more. 89% of Democrats and 63% of independents. And in just squeaking by, is Trump guilty in the eyes of half the respondents? 51% said yes. 88% of Democrats, 53% of independents, 14% of Republicans. Again, whether or not he's guilty, as we've talked about in our current political upside down, doesn't really matter in terms of whether or not people will vote for him again, I think, at least not his base. But the idea that the Justice Department is being fair, Yasmin, so that no matter what, you're picking off a lot of people there. The sort of the discrepancy between the people who will vote for Trump again and the people who, you know, like there's just this growing chasm. You know what I'm saying? In terms of the people who are like, if you think it's fair, then are you really gonna openly vote for a criminal? Maybe the base will, but maybe not the majority.
Yeah, so what I think, or what I hope maybe is happening, is that a lot of Americans are tired and they're confused. And all we want is some clarity so we can just move forward, figure out what happened, why it happened, who was involved, all these factors, so we can get back to some semblance of a normal American election process. And we used to have that up until very, very recently. Until very recently, every election day, you would go, you would vote, and then you would have a president the next day, right? That's usually 9 times out of 10 how it goes, with the exception of, you know, Bush, Gore, and then with all the Trump stuff that happens. And it's really frustrating. And, you know, we're supposed to be the example of democracy around the world, and it's also kind of embarrassing. So I think apart from the actual, the most zealous of the Trump base, I think most people, Republicans and Democrats alike, actually want to get back to some bit of normalcy, at least where the elections are concerned.
Agreed, yes. I couldn't have said it better. And I think, you know, even that dude, Oliver Anthony, the singer, who's basically like, she's like, I'm just a guy. I'm just annoyed at like the 1% and all these people who don't speak to me and my concerns and my needs, because they're all busy jockeying and scoring political points with one another.
Yeah.
And speaking of scoring political points, let's talk about the Biden impeachment, because the crime boss shan't go unpunished. And Republicans in their Republican-controlled House are zeroing in on trying to finally start an impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden. Take a look.
We're just asking members of Congress, do you think we should inquire about impeachment? It's not saying, do you want to impeach? It's saying, should we just ask the question? And at this point right now, I'm like, what the hell is wrong with Republicans that we can't just, hey guys, maybe ask the question. Maybe we should just ask and think about it and look at it and investigate.
We're just asking questions here. Please, please, please open this investigation. And notice Marjorie Greene is mad at Republicans. That's because not all Republicans in the House are unified on the question of whether to impeach Joe Biden, whether or not this is a priority for them. And we'll get into those details. A lot of them are wondering whether they should impeach Joe Biden or they should shut down the government. That's right. There is a looming deadline to pass a resolution for a continuing resolution to fund the government, because this is what we do in this political system. And we just sort of punt the football as to whether or not the government will continue to be funded or not. So we'll get into the politics behind that. But Marjorie Greene is mad at her own party, and that's probably because her party's looking at the polls, and not every Republican is in a deep red district. So let's look at this new polling coming out from Public Policy that found that 56% of registered voters think a GOP impeachment inquiry into Biden would be a partisan political stunt, including 20% of Trump voters and 88% of Biden voters. I love the 20%. They're like, yeah, it's a political stunt. Let's do it. But compare that to data that we just received about whether or not the investigations and the indictments of Donald Trump, whether those are politically motivated and whether the Justice Department is being fair. Majority of Americans say, yeah, no, it's fair. That's not political. Yeah, we all saw that. We saw it. We saw the crimes with our own eyes. So compare that to doing the same thing to Joe Biden. And that is making Marjorie Greene and other members of the Freedom Caucus real mad. Here she is with the rest of her thoughts.
I am confident. And the reason why I'm confident is we had a House GOP call yesterday, and that was his big push on the call. So I think if we were to have the vote today right now, Kevin McCarthy would be one of the first ones to vote yes. So it's not our speaker. It's still some of these few remaining Republicans that maybe won a Biden district or they, for whatever reason, I don't know. But I think that our conference is coming together, and we should be voting on this in September. If we don't, you're gonna see the Marjorie Taylor Greene you've always known.
Oh, she's gonna do 20 more burpees, and we're gonna be like, don't make me watch your Instagram. But there's Marjorie Greene speaking about Kevin McCarthy, who does look like he wants to begin an impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden. However, he also is the Speaker of the House, and he has a job. And the job is bare minimum, keep the government running, right? And in order to keep the government running, he's got to make sure that everyone's going to vote for the continuing resolution to fund the government. So here's Kevin McCarthy's strategy to give Republicans what they want, all Republicans. He is, according to the Times, trying to tie the issue to the issue of the continuing resolution to the prospect of impeaching Mr. Biden. Mr. McCarthy appears to be hoping that conservative desire to investigate and possibly charge him with high crimes and misdemeanors, particularly amid the multiple criminal cases against former President Donald J. Trump, might outweigh their resistance to voting in favor of federal spending. So here's, I want to jump down actually to graphic 4 because Republicans are absolutely trying to be obstructionist when it comes to any spending. We saw them, of course, take out added food stamp benefits for millions and millions of Americans just recently. They're trying to, you know, hold the line on anything that would benefit all of us. But so in terms of what they have passed in terms of spending, the House has passed just one of its 12 spending bills. And the conservatives are threatening to sink some of the others without deeper spending cuts and added provisions such as denying funding for Trump prosecutions. Ooh, there's a strategy. The Senate has not yet put out any of its appropriations bills on the floor, though the Appropriations Committee has approved all 12 on a bipartisan basis at higher spending levels than the House, setting up a clash. So Senate seems to be on board with these funding bills. The House is like, nah, you gotta stop funding the Trump investigations and the indictments. However, if there is a shutdown, there's only one investigation they do want to continue. So this is according to Representative Ken Buck, who says it's not as if the investigators won't be considered necessary or essential personnel. He noted that Mr. McCarthy would have the authority to determine which parts of the House continue to operate. He's the one who decides how much the House we shut down. In other words, keep the Biden investigations open, shut down the Trump ones. Can we do that? Can we do that? Yasmin, do you see the politics? Have I clarified how the politics are working out on this?
Yeah, you have, and I hate it. You did a great job, but I hate everything that you said. So I think what's kind of happening here, well, there's a lot of things happening here, but going back to the poll that a lot of people actually do want to see something happen with the Trump indictments, they see criminality where it happened. I think what's happening is the Republicans have been playing these political games for so long, but now they've never really offered any kind of evidence to support all the outlandish claims that they've been making for so long. And that's for Democrats. We obviously see through a lot of that stuff. That's why we're Democrats. But a lot of the Republicans, I have to believe, are also getting tired of hearing over and over again about these things and seeing no evidence to support any of the claims. And right. So the Republicans are losing support. They're actually losing fundraising money too. They're falling very far behind on their fundraising goals right now for the 2024 election. I want to say, and maybe this is naive and like overly optimistic of me, and I'm not an optimistic person, but maybe the rhetoric just isn't working anymore. So they have to start looking for different things to do. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, she just wants to ask a question. But the thing is, asking that question costs a lot of time and costs a lot of money. So what are the American people paying Marjorie Taylor Greene to do? She's not actually doing anything by championing something that she knows is not going to go anywhere, that she knows has no legs. She's able to look busy and look like she's doing something for the American people when in reality, she is doing literally nothing.
I couldn't have said it better. Yes, 100%. And just to clarify, in fact, if there is a government shutdown, the investigations into Donald Trump, the ones under the DOJ, they continue. Effectively, that just goes on. There's no way to actually stop them from continuing. Apparently, they are funded through a permanent indefinite appropriation for independent counsels. You know what else that means? It means that the Hunter Biden independent counsel, headed by David Weiss, which now I guess is the enemy of the Republicans, they hate that David Weiss was appointed. They're super mad at it. But that continues too. So hey, Beltway, hey, Swamp, everyone gets their investigation. It will continue even if you decide to hold our entire government hostage because families are eating too many calories. So yay, I think we're all winners except for, oh yeah, the American people. Let's take a break because we need to. We need to just stretch it out and get in because we gotta stretch our hammies because there's way more news after this. Welcome back, everybody, to the Damage Report. So much more to get into. With me, Yasmin Khan. Very excited to have her here. There is, we got some things to work through. Beginning with this. The people of Florida are still currently grappling with the aftermath of Hurricane Idalia. 250,000 people are without power as of today, as of Thursday. But that's not stopping Governor Ron DeSantis from claiming a W in this one and saying that he is amazing when it comes to climate preparedness. Sure, we'll see about that, Jan. There have been just a couple reported deaths so far. There is definitely still a storm surge in Florida. But there was one victim of that storm, and that was the tree outside of the governor's mansion. Here it is, tweeted by Miss Governor, Ms. DeSantis, Casey, who tweeted, 100-year-old oak tree falls on the governor's mansion in Tallahassee. Mason, Madison, Mamie and I, oh God, are those her kids, were home at the time, but thankfully no one was injured. Our prayers are with everyone impacted by the storm. So there's a tree, there's the fallen oak tree, which we're so happy that it did not hit the governor's mansion. For whom could wish such a terrible, heinous crime upon anyone or any wonderful family in the governor's mansion? There it was. So there's the down tree. And what do we do with a down tree near your home? We use it as a marketing opportunity and a campaign opportunity on Fox News. And that's exactly what Ron DeSantis did. Take a look.
What's your assessment at this hour?
Well, Sean, we were ready for this. So we had a search and rescue team staged, National Guard. We had 5,500 National Guard. We had 1.2 million gallons of gasoline in the event of fuel shortages. We had over 30,000 linemen to restore power. And so as soon as the storm passed, our first responders were on the scene checking on people. The good news is that we have not seen the type of loss of life like we did at Hurricane Ian in the coastal areas. They did experience significant storm surge. Most of the people did evacuate. And so we're cautiously optimistic that we're going to end up okay on that.
Yes, there he is, using the tree that fell outside of his home as a photo op to go on Fox News. And note, Yasmin, the slow push in from Fox. That is a very set shot. Like, that took like half an hour to set up. It's lit beautifully. Notice how hard Fox News is trying to make a President Ron DeSantis happen. And here this tree goes down right by his home. It could have actually hurt his family. This is a guy, and we'll get into more. This is a guy who says that climate change is not man-made, believes this is a massive hoax, will not raise his hand in a Republican primary debate to that effect.
I actually noticed the lighting in that shot, and so it's funny that you mentioned that. I was like, oh, that looks really good. But you know, I don't understand how anyone along the Gulf Coast is still denying climate change, especially in the state of Florida. I live in Texas. We have the same people here. I literally don't get it, right? You can literally feel the impacts of climate change here. But these moments, you know, whenever we have natural disasters or any kind of disaster, really, you know, we elect people into government positions specifically to deal with situations like these natural disasters and shootings, et cetera. When things like this happen, we just need these elected officials to do the job that we elected them to do. But instead, these events, they shake up people's lives, they destroy lives, and they're played as political opportunities. And you know, DeSantis is using all of this. A hurricane hit his state, and it's like a good thing for him. He's using it to play up some election clout and be like, look at what a good leader I am. What would be better is if you actually were just a good leader. If you actually did just take care of your people, you took care of the land that you're in charge of, that would be infinitely more valuable than a weird photo op in front of your tree. And it would be better than a stump speech. And it would actually probably have a demonstrable influence at the polls. Just be better. Just be better at your job, DeSantis.
And look, I could concede that maybe there was preparedness in this particular hurricane. You know, good on like the governor on this case, and like good on the hurricane for not being as devastating thus far. But let's talk about the future, as you're talking about. You know, a state like Florida, one of the states most susceptible to rising sea levels and to climate chaos. What is DeSantis doing for the future of Florida? In fact, a lot. To move it in the opposite direction and make sure it is completely unprepared, nor is taking any steps to mitigate the impact of climate change. So actually, according to Food and Water Watch, they called DeSantis in Florida the most extreme energy preemption bills in the nation. Signed last year, the bills ban Florida cities from and towns from adopting 100% clean energy goals, reasoning that those goals would discriminate against fossil fuels. Oh, dude, CRT has come for our energy policy. So we can't discriminate against fossil fuels. So effectively, no fossil fuels, no alternatives to fossil fuels in this state. Cool, cool, cool. All right, well, let's talk about what else he's doing to turn that around. To that effect, he's looking at the pension policy. So the second policy came a month ago when DeSantis adopted measures to ban the state's $186 billion pension fund from making investment decisions that consider climate change. DeSantis did this because he says such decisions constitute an ideological agenda. Sure, but being for fossil fuels, that's not ideological, right? Just like if you're, you know, pro-white or let's say a white supremacist, that's not ideological, that's just normal. But if you talk about equity or diversity, you've got a political agenda. I mean, this is how rotten Republicans' brains are, that they consider climate to be in the same category as, like, I don't know, some kind of, again, like anti-woke level of discussion. This is why we can't have anything nice. I want to continue a little bit before I jump to you, Yasmin, because it's not for lack of trying. The government, the federal government, is trying to help states like Florida under specifically the Inflation Reduction Act. And what has DeSantis done? Rejected the money. In fact, he just rejected a bunch of money. So let's get into. He used a line item veto in June, just this summer, to reject a $5 million federal grant to set up rebate programs for Floridians to retrofit their homes with energy efficient appliances. This in turn meant that Florida couldn't access the $341 million from the Inflation Reduction Act allotted to fund the program. The Sunshine State has until August 2024 to reapply for the money. My guess is they won't. He also, however, rejected an additional $3 million from the same IRA funds to help fight pollution, as well as the Solar for All program that helps low-income people get solar panels. Yeah, low, that must be woke somehow. The IRA is a major part of Biden's overall climate agenda, and obviously, as we all know, the largest investment to address climate change in US history. My favorite part of this is that other states are looking at Florida and going like, oh, you're not gonna finish that? Could I have your piece? So other states are eager to take the money that Florida has rejected. Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island has asked the Energy Department to send Florida's money to his and other states. Rhode Island, quote, could utilize additional funds that Florida's governor may not accept for purely partisan reasons, Reed wrote to the Energy Department. Yasmin, we're seeing the same thing that we saw under Obamacare, where expansion of Medicaid was covered and is covered up to 90% by the federal government, and red states, purely because this was an Obama policy, rejected getting free money so that the poorest people in their states could have healthcare. Same thing with climate preparedness or any kind of alternatives to fossil fuels.
Oh my God, there was so much in that segment that I kind of don't even know where to start. Like, Florida is impressive. I thought Texas was bad with all the fossil fuels and the energy and all the whatever. Florida might have us beat, don't quote me on that, but it's pretty bad over there. And I also like the choice of words that he used, that it was discrimination against fossil fuels to use things like solar panels or to even look for alternative energy sources. In Texas, whenever we had our polar vortex, that was like very much caused by our state government. They blamed it on windmills, you know? So that's what we're dealing with here. And it's very hard to take any of these talking points seriously, right? They really don't have the data to back up their claims that it's a hoax, that it's not, you know, causing any kind of problems, things like that. And again, we are talking about Florida here. I have so many people that I know in Florida, and I know that they would love to have some kind of better, more efficient energy options in Florida. It's too hot in the South for people to live without air conditioning, right? I live in the South. It is too hot to function here. You need air conditioning. If you go outside, you can chew the air. It's so hot. And it's like unfathomable that somebody could want to lead a state like Florida and then decide that he doesn't want to discriminate against fossil fuels. It's right, also and like mm-hmm. economically, it doesn't even make sense.
Exactly. One, that is it. It's like, this is not a partisan issue. It's a pocketbook issue. I know that makes me sound like some sort of like political wonk, but that's exactly what it is. You're talking about ACs. Guess what's more effective than that? Heat pumps, right? Heat pumps will save you massive amounts on your energy bills. Everyone wants to save, and Republicans especially want to save. That's their whole like id. That's all they are, is just, well, pay less in taxes, pay less, pay less, pay less. And yet they have their governors actively rejecting this money. And of course, the people who have the most amount of, like, you know, rich people in Florida can pay for like their energy bills. It's the poor folks, it's low income people, it's people this would actually help that will be bearing the brunt of all the climate chaos that is coming for the state. But thankfully, it seems to have been a little lighter this time around, but it only gets more chaotic. Former Attorney General Ken Paxton, who has been impeached, but not removed. In fact, his trial is coming up. This is very exciting. Ken Paxton, by the way, if you don't know, pushed extreme border militarization and all kinds of anti-immigrant policies as AG. He specifically sued all Democratic presidents. He sued Obama, he sued Joe Biden over their border policies. The guy has been in lockstep with folks like Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Dan Patrick, I believe, Fitzpatrick, I forgot what his
what's
his
Dan name? Patrick, yeah.
Dan Patrick, just wanted to add the Fitz, you know, why not? But Dan Patrick, he's been in lockstep, but not no more. And now we have more details about Ken Paxton's impeachment. Because there's new revelations that his relationship with an indicted Austin developer, Nate Paul, who contributed $25,000 to his campaign, got him into trouble. So impeachment managers allege that Paxton hired attorney Brandon Kamick to help his buddy harass business rivals, buddy being Nate Paul, harass business rivals and other perceived enemies before he was arrested. Records show Paul called his plan Operation Deep Sea. In return, Paul helped Paxton hide an affair with a mistress using burner phones, secret emails, and a fake Uber account, records allege. That's just sad when you need help hiding your affair. But anyway, who am I to judge? In addition, however, the House impeachment managers said that Nate Paul paid for renovations at Paxton's house in McKinney. Paxton is also accused of using the power in his office to interfere with a federal investigation into Paul and helping Paul avoid foreclosures of his properties. But wait, there's more. In new records obtained by the Associated Press, interviews with former aides and a review of thousands of legal filings reveal other ways in which Paxton allegedly reaped the benefits of being one of Texas's most powerful figures. Together, they show how conviction and removal from office could cost him not just a job, but a lifestyle. Oh no. Last year, his travels were extensive. Records show that after winning a Republican primary runoff against George P. Bush, remember that dude, who cast Paxton as unfit for office, Paxton spent 2 months flying to cities in the Caribbean and Europe. It's unclear who paid for his travel, but trips cost taxpayers a combined $91,000 for simply his security detail. There's a lot more. He basically gave his wife a bunch of money as well. It's just apparently the government of Qatar flew him to the country for the World Cup. It's fun. And maybe Yasmin, as a Texan, you have a little bit more insight into my man.
Oh God, like Ken Paxton, okay, he has the distinction of being the country's most legally embattled attorney general, which is ironic because attorney general is the highest law enforcement agent in an entire state, right? Every state has an attorney general, and ours is this guy, Ken Paxton. And I remember, like, I think it was a few months ago, I was doing videos for The Breakdown, and I must have done like three straight days of Ken Paxton videos, because every day there was like something coming out about him. At one point, there was a literal dumpster on fire outside of his office, and it was like, oh, what could have possibly happened, you know? So that's who we're dealing with here. He did get impeached, and which that was actually a pretty big deal, because he was impeached by Republicans in the House. He was being investigated by Republicans in the House. Texas is, the state government at least, is incredibly red. So it's very hard for any kind of like accountability to happen. So just the fact that he got impeached is pretty incredible. And he got impeached for reasons, I think it was like, basically he was running a really poor office, right? It was a lot of worker discrimination, that kind of thing, bad work environment. And it was so bad that it got him impeached. Whether or not he'll actually be released or removed from office is another thing entirely. I'm not confident that that is actually what's going to happen, because as I said, the state government is so red, it's so entrenched in corruption that nobody really talks about or nobody really calls it that. But Dan Patrick, as you mentioned, is already making moves to help out his friend Ken Paxton. So, I mean, we'll see what happens, but I'm not holding my breath.
Interesting. Yeah. So they were, Republicans voted to impeach, but they might not actually remove, which is, you know, it's just
there's
par for
ways
the course
around all these things. So we'll see. Yeah.
And the trial, his trial begins September 5th. But again, like we mentioned, there's a lot more that they're discovering about the depths of his corruption. It wasn't just a bad work environment, or maybe the original reasons that he was impeached in the first place. Just a final note on just graphic 8, the senators will act as a jury, obviously, as we saw in the federal impeachment against Donald Trump, two of them actually, voting individually on each article of impeachment. If they convict him on at least one of the 20 articles, Paxton will be removed from office. The court of impeachment may also decide whether to bar him from holding future office. Basically, 21 of the 31 senators have to vote for him to be removed. There are 19 Senate Republicans and 12 Democrats. Yasmin's not holding her breath. We shall see if just, I mean, what does it say if he just continues on? It's like, okay.
Just I mean, that's what's been happening. He was already very legally embattled when he was reelected.
Joe Manchin and Heather Manchin are starting a new fund. They're starting a new political entity to support their own pocketbooks. I mean, no, centrist policies. So this is according to the Wall Street Journal. Senator Joe Manchin and his daughter Heather are pitching major political donors on a nascent effort to promote centrist policies and candidates that is projected to cost more than $100 million. The latest twist in the mystery over the West Virginia's Democrats' political future. A memo about the project says, the memo pitching that project says at least $100 million is needed to change the national narrative and garner support for those willing to prioritize policy and country over party and politics. The memo proposes building a coalition that would, among other things, work to rein in US spending and debt, and boost US energy independence and increase border security. It sounds like it's just a Republican PAC. What's the difference? This, however, is not associated with No Labels, once again, which is the political group that is trying to recruit Joe Manchin for a third party run to, you know, speak to the minority of people who are like fiscally conservative, but happen to have like a gay son or whoever they're talking to. They might also seek their funds elsewhere beyond No Labels. There's a guy named Ken Langone, everybody, you know your billionaires. He's the billionaire co-founder of the Home Depot. Remember that dude? Mm-hmm. Major Republican donor said Manchin and his daughter have sought his backing for their endeavor. He said that he read their pitch and had a phone call with the senator earlier this month, and that their effort has his support. Obviously, this comes as Joe Manchin is wondering, what's he gonna do? Is he gonna run for president? Lastly, Senator Manchin is weighing whether to mount an uphill effort to win re-election to the Senate in 2024, or pursue a long shot run for president, take on different roles in politics altogether. A lobbyist, the centrist senator who represents a solidly Republican state, has been a pivotal deal maker in recent years, i.e. deal destroyer, i.e. what are you going to do? Which I want all of the red carpets, and I want just a little back massage, just the neck. Just a neck right there. There we go. Also coal, more coal. Yasmin, do we need this? We need this entity. I feel like the centrists aren't represented enough.
Yeah. Okay. So he called, you want to say centrist, fine, but you know, what's his name? Ken Langone, the Home Depot guy. He's not a centrist at all, right? And he's backing something like this. So, you know what? A coalition, like, you need $100 million to build a coalition and change the narrative. I guess that costs $100 million to do. But Joe Manchin, you know, the question of what's he going to do next, he needs a new plan, right? Everybody knows what his shtick is now in the Senate. The people of West Virginia, they were already duped once. I would hope that they're not duped again. You know, we already know what he's going to do. We already know that he's not a Democrat. We already know that he's very obstructionist once he was once he got into the Senate. So he does need to appeal to a new base, because I feel like that's kind of like a one-time trick that you get to pull.
Right.
And so he needs to kind of reassess his audience, reassess who his base actually is. And I would think that his base is full of Republicans who don't want to be associated with like Trump Republicans anymore, but they're still Republicans. There's nothing centrist about Joe Manchin. There's nothing centrist about the Home Depot guy who's supporting him. So, you know, yes, if he wants to change the narrative, he's going to need, it's going to take a lot of work for him to do that.
Right. I mean, it's corporate centrism. It's just there's a lot of money out there. And like you rightfully said, money that is sort of souring on the MAGA thing, doesn't see a lot of future, doesn't see anyone mounting a real defense to Trump. But they got money to burn, you know, and especially if it's a tax write off, hell yeah. So to say nothing of the dark money and the corporations that want to turn their tax breaks back into political power, which is exactly what they do. And they use Senators Joe Manchin and I guess his daughter now to do that. Reminder about his daughter, Heather. She's the former chief executive of the EpiPen maker Mylon. And she said she registered a politically active nonprofit organization called Americans Together in late July, and that she plans to hire staff in the coming weeks. So Americans Together is maybe what it's going to be called. Just a little point of reference and note that EpiPen, she made a killing on the EpiPen. And as we've talked about in terms of insulin and the cost of administering it, it is exorbitant in the United States. And so she made hand over fist money off of that private endeavor, preying on people who absolutely need it. So however, she's got thoughts. She's got a lot of thoughts. She says, quote, and this is about her dad, what we both very much agree on is that the system is broken and actually in deep trouble. We've been thinking about what can be done to bring people together. Bring people together to make money for me and them, but mostly me, but also them, but not for everyone. What else do you want, Yasmin? He got like the Mountain Valley Pipeline through in the Inflation Reduction Act, right? He got like an entire, ironically, part of his own land or backyard preserved, the only place that there won't be oil exploitation or any kind of fossil fuel extraction in West Virginia is like his own property, because that's the only part that he cares about. He's gotten everything. He got the pen from Joe Biden, who signed the Inflation Reduction Act. What more do these people want?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting about this story is that we all know Joe Manchin. A lot of us don't like Joe Manchin. He has carved off like a really weird, impressive niche for himself in American politics. But also his daughter is horrible, and do not forget that. And I think it just goes to show that there's all these really public figures who are making life actively difficult for the people who live in this country, but there's a lot of other people behind the scenes who are enacting it, right? Mm-hmm. And there's just no accountability. I don't know what more Joe Manchin wants. I don't know if he wants to be the president. Like, I honestly don't know. But his weird little niche that he's carved out, I don't know if that's enough to win him the presidency. But you know, what did you call him earlier? He's like the ghost president right now, right? He's actively pulling all these strings behind the scenes. He has so much power. What's he going to do with it?
I'm afraid that whatever he's going to do with it.
We're all terrified.
You guys, we have to leave it there. That has been the linear show. There is much more show on YouTube, but if you're watching on linear, good day. We have a lot more in the aftermath. Don't go nowhere. Stick with us. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.